All right, great to have him back. Lot on his plate these days as a congressman and, of course, making the rounds in and around New York State regarding the gubernatorial run. It's my pleasure to have him back. Congressman Lee Zeldin, representing Congressional District 1. Sir, how are you? Welcome.
I'm doing great. It's good to be with you again, Jay.
Always great having you. Now, let's get into a couple of things in the short period of time here. So what can you tell us? I was reading, Congressman, you have Congressional Republicans, a little bit of pushback of the preparation is two priority items backed by the Dems. And on the Senate, they're going to probably block a vote today with advance. Talking about the infrastructure bill here, folks, because they say they have not yet struck a deal with Democrats to draft the legislation. So, you know, I'm looking at a couple of things here, Congressman. If the vote fails, talks probably will intensify, obviously trying to advance things by early next week. But, you know, it's interesting as far as what's going to happen with this bill, because it's been like a ping pong match. What can you tell us regarding infrastructure?
So here on the Hill right now, the House is only scheduled to be in session until the end of next week, and then goes on August recess. I've actually found that Congress works better on deadlines. I don't say it works well, but it works better on deadlines. So having a sense of urgency to the talks adds a pressure point that sometimes results in good things getting done. Other times it results in a rush to getting bad things done, like trying to pass a funding bill as you're going into Christmas Eve and members want to go home for the holidays, and then they just start adding like a Christmas tree onto a spending bill the country can't afford, and then you're rushing to pass something bad. So just because there is this deadline and urgency and pressure and a lot of talks going on, this could go different ways. I mean, one option is it could end up going sideways and there is no infrastructure bill that gets done over the next couple weeks. That's a possibility. Another possibility is that the Democrats decide to just go at it alone. They try to pass a bill with the 50 votes plus the vice president to get something through the Senate, and it becomes more of a partisan bill. The cost will be higher. There will be items in it that are more controversial. That is a whole other controversy in and of itself if the Democrats go that way, and that's a possibility. The other one is that there's bipartisan support for an infrastructure bill, and you do have a number of Republicans in the Senate and the House who, in good faith, are approaching this trying to be part of getting to yes. There is a possibility that there will be a bipartisan infrastructure bill, but we'll see. There are those conversations going on between the House and the Senate and the White House, but right now there are a few different ways this can go, including sideways.
All righty. So we'll keep an eye on that. Let's shift a little bit towards January 6th, the Capitol riots. You know, I kind of look at this in a couple of ways, but not enough emphasis, Congressman, at least in my line of thinking. Now, it's easy to point to the former president and everything else, but a lot of people, you know, want to say, well, what about preparation here? I mean, to me, there was such a lack thereof of presence as far as the 6th was concerned. The lack of preparation. I mean, and I understand, you know, with the committee members and everything else and, you know, the House's new investigative committee, but what about the aspect of looking why so little preparation involved in January the 6th? Do you feel that's going to be some emphasis as far as what could go on here?
Well, this is really Pelosi's commission, and there's a possibility that any item that makes Pelosi look bad or doesn't make the Republicans look bad just don't get covered. This is a very partisan process that is being formed, and I'm pretty sure that that's the way that this is going to be executed. So as far as items that make sense that should be discussed, I would imagine that there are a number of aspects that won't get covered that you think should. One of the items, as you point out, that and by the way, Congress has jurisdiction to look into this already. You don't even have to create a select committee. And as a matter of fact, you have congressional committees already looking into these items, and others that could and have jurisdiction but aren't. But anyway, to your point, the FBI gave a heads up in advance that there was an issue expected. This was not a shock what happened on that day, according to the FBI putting out that notice the day before. And then as you're moving towards the Capitol, where are the reserves? I mean, considering what you're doing at the Capitol, where was the reinforcements? Why wasn't the security posture changed as this was unfolding? Where was the communication, the chain of command breakdown? Why were certain asks not made? Why were other offers not taken up? I'm just giving you a sampling of a number of items related to the planning, the posturing, the play calls on the spot, and ways to better protect the Capitol. Why were there some entrances to the Capitol where people were walking in like they were tourists taking selfies with Capitol Police? So, you know, there's a number of questions there. Whether or not it gets covered, we'll see.
And a lot of people don't talk about this stuff, but you know, you have to point that out. Lee Zeldin with us, Congressman Zeldin. You know, I was taken back. Now, listen, you know, Joe Biden could be cited for many instances so far in his first 6 months. You want to talk inflation, you want to talk borders and everything else, but I got to tell you, I was taken back by the fact that, and you rightfully so chimed in, and you're a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, but, you know, the administration's decision to invite the UN racism envoy. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, we know the record on condemning human rights violations globally, but to criticize the United States on the world stage, I mean, absolutely despicable. You wonder, what in the heck is Joe Biden thinking here, Congressman? And I could not believe this. I don't know what gives here. I mean, do you have any realm of thinking of what could go on within the confines of the White House on this?
It's another bizarre play call, and I do not want the UN racism envoy to be coming into the United States for the purpose of criticizing us on the world stage. The racism envoy, the human rights element, and individuals who are active with the UN have a very shoddy record globally. Where is their condemnation of what is being played out every day in China and Iran and North Korea and elsewhere? Why does so much end up playing out before our very eyes that doesn't get that criticism from the United Nations? That list goes on. I mean, a lot of it plays out in the Gaza Strip and elsewhere. And here you're going to import morals. This is what I put out in my statement. My original reaction to it was you're importing morals from the UN, and we don't need that here in our country. It's the greatest country in the world. And for this entity to be criticizing the United States globally like this, whether or not it ends up suiting some aspect of a liberal activist, you know, woke BLM type agenda here in the United States, maybe that would be a justification to have the racism envoy come in and say our country's systemically racist and just broad brush massive criticisms of us. But I don't see any reason at all why the Biden administration, with actual sound reason and justification, would be wanting this racism envoy to come in and do that.
And I'll tell you another thing, not enough being done as far as the folks of Cuba are concerned, in my estimation. And again, being on the Foreign Affairs Committee as you are, I can only imagine what you're thinking here. You know, you look at the people of Cuba, the shortages of food and medical resources, a socialist regime beyond. It is beyond reprehensible as far as, you know, how do you deal with this? And I don't think enough has been said regarding, you know, what's going on down there. Just decaying conditions that have been present for so long and everything else. And you know what? The people have had enough. And They deserve to be liberated. Oppression, failures. I mean, you go back how many years on this? And really not enough being said, in my estimation, by this current administration. But, you know, again, being on the committee and everything else, I'm sure you're recognizing this stuff. And hopefully voices are going to be heard here.
That's right. These Cubans are crying out, holding up American flags, desperate for freedom and liberty, massively harmed by the socialist policies of the regime. They are lacking access for communications. That's something that the United States can assist with. But from the economy, opportunity, housing, and more, they are hitting their breaking points, and they can't stand it. They can't keep living like this, and they're speaking out, and they're crying out for freedom. And the United States should be standing shoulder to shoulder, being outspoken, taking inventory of diplomatic levers of power. Information is an instrument of national power here in the United States. So we should be utilizing these other non-military instruments of national power to help the Cuban people. I remember Ronald Reagan told a joke in the 80s, and he said Castro was giving a speech and there's thousands of Cubans there, and somebody yells out, "Peanuts, popcorn, Cracker Jacks." And Castro keeps going on with his speech, and a little distracted, but he's going to try to get through it, and the person yells out again, "Peanuts, popcorn, Cracker Jacks." So Reagan stops his, Castro stops his speech, and he says that if any of you, whoever's doing that, says that again, I'm going to kick you so far, so hard, you're going to land in Miami. Castro continues his speech, and the entire crowd yells out, "Peanuts, popcorn, Cracker Jacks." And it just, for decades, you have had this understanding, this fundamental contrast between our two countries, a desperate cry for freedom and liberty from the Cuban people. We've got it here, but from one administration to the next, a very uneven application of taking inventory of ways to assist. And right now is the moment to step up and help.
More before we let you go, sir. So I guess it's a good sign, right? U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the bid solicitation process. I'm talking about the construction folks, the initial one, of the FIMP, Fire Island and Montauk Point, the project. Hopefully, you know, the dredging that's here, the shoreline projects, 83 miles coastline and everything else. So I was reading Congressman opening bids will start next month, but that to me is a very good sign, no?
Oh, absolutely. And this is an idea from the middle of the last century. People started talking about this vision, and it was crafted over the course of several decades. But over the course of what is now the last decade or so, it's become a reality, and the authorizations have gotten through, and the public comment period, and getting all the different levels of government to sign off and have questions answered, making sure that the funding is there. There's so much that's gone into this. Just on the federal agency piece of it, there are parts where, you know, I'm sitting here talking to the Army Corps of Engineers, DOI, Fish and Wildlife, and you're just trying to get everyone synced up with a mutual agreement within the level of government, let alone getting agreement with the different agencies of different levels of government. It's been a huge process getting to this point, but it's a reality. It's going to happen, and it's a very long time coming. Long Island, our barrier is going to be built stronger than it's ever been before with a massive investment. It's very exciting.
A big time deal, and the bids will start in August. And finally, you know, as far as the gubernatorial run, I hear nothing but good things. You know, you're raising money, you're getting some great endorsements, reaction is good. You know, you're keeping an eye as far as what's happening as in Albany, no question, as far as the current governor is concerned. He's got his issues, investigations, inquiries, and everything else going on. Tell me how things are going here. Are you pleased? Reaction in and around the state? I know you've been making the rounds. Give me a little something.
It's been great. I mean, last week I was Tuesday in Oswego, and on Wednesday through Dutchess. Thursday we're Brooklyn, and Friday we were heading up through from Rensselaer to Warren into the North Country, where we were Saturday and Sunday. I'm down in D.C. right now. We're here Monday through Thursday this week, and tomorrow I fly straight up to Western New York and have a lot going on in a few different regions upstate through this weekend. So we've been, I mean, it was already well over a month ago now where we hit our 62nd county, and we're just continuing to move around. The feedback's been outstanding. There are a whole lot of New Yorkers who want to go vote right now. They want Cuomo gone. There's a passion and an emotion, a hunger that is out there around this state. People, we're just talking about breaking points abroad. We have New Yorkers hitting their breaking point in their own way, and cost of living, public safety, education, freedoms, more corruption by this governor. People are hitting their own breaking point with this governor, with their own lives, their own decisions of whether or not to stay here. They feel like the state is at a breaking point. We're campaigning, advocating for balance, political balance, geographic balance. We need to save our state. The fundraising's been outstanding. We last week announced raising more in 3 months than over $4 million than the governor raised in the last 6 months. He raised $2.3 million, so it wasn't even close. We're tripling his pace. The endorsements have been coming in. We're declared over the last 6 weeks or so the presumptive nominee of the New York State Conservative Party. At the end of last month, the presumptive nominee of the New York State Republican Party, because we're getting so much support from both parties. The team's good. Chemistry's great. I'm loving the energy that's out there. We're getting some good earned media around the state. We're working hard, taking nothing for granted. So it's a must-win race. And when you go into a midterm, historically speaking, if you're trying to figure out which party has the advantage, the party not in the White House wins the midterm every single time. There's only one exception, 2002, after 9/11, Republicans held their own. Every other midterm, the party not in the White House wins the midterms. But in this case, it's not just a Democrat in the White House. It's a Democrat in charge of everything at every level. It's the first time in my lifetime. It's one-party Democrat rule in D.C., Albany, and New York City going into a midterm. It's never happened before. So the alignment is favorable. Pendulums swing. And there's a pendulum here in this state that's desperate to swing back, and we're going to do what we need to do to win.
All right. You know, Congressman, well said. It's a great point regarding the midterms and the occupying of the different areas of party affiliation here. So we're going to keep an eye on things. Well done, sir. We look forward to the next time. You stay well. A lot on your plate.
Yeah, you too.
Stay well.
Take care, Jay.
You got it. You got it, Congressman Lee Zell. And you know, listen, you know, Long Island, New York State, folks, you know, have you made your way in and around the state? Western, Buffalo area, Mohawk Valley. I mean, it's just beautiful. We have a beautiful state here in so many different areas. It is really amazing. You know, some areas you don't even know you're in New York. You know, you feel like you're in Iowa. You know, I mean, it's just a gorgeous setting in so many different areas. Have you taken rides in around the state? You know, and I haven't done that in a while. One thing, I have family upstate all over the place. And in my travels, you know, you come back and you just think about how beautiful a state we live in. And, you know, the thing is, it's not taken in properly anymore. You know, that's the biggest thing right now. And obviously with the pandemic and everything else. But because the state has been just mired in a mess beyond, I'm talking even beyond the pandemic. You know, it's a fiscal mess. We know it is. But, you know, I couldn't help but think, as Congressman Zeldin has made the rounds, and, you know, he's got a lot on his plate. He's doing work in Washington, and he's off as far as Western New York is concerned, you know. So he's making the rounds. He's getting good reaction. He's getting a lot of donations. More fundraising will be in the works. And, you know, if Andrew Cuomo is his butt, now I still feel Cuomo will not be there when all's said and done. Now, who will be the Dem nominee? Could be a Letitia James. Who knows? It could be. And listen, think about this. It's not out of the realm to have the thought process of this county executive in Suffolk County throwing his hat in the ring. Remember, he's term limited after he's done. So, in essence, How about a Steve Ballone versus Lee Zeldin? When all said, I mean, it's not out of the realm. It's not out of the realm to think that way. But think about currently right now where, and he's right, where Zeldin has gained those funds. People are believing in this guy, okay? And he's had a pretty good track record as a congressman. Think about that, okay? Think about how, and I say it all the time, he saved Long Island in so many ways, fiscally, during this pandemic, gaining funds normally would not be gained without his relationships that have been established in Washington with that of the former Treasury Secretary in Steve Mnuchin and company, and even the son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Listen, you have to make inroads in that regard if you are going to have strings pulled. And normally it wouldn't happen, but he was able to do that. He was, and Steve Ballone admitted on these airwaves that Lee Zeldin did a great job. A lot of people recognize Lee Zeldin. Okay. So it'll be very interesting. It has been stagnant as far as Cuomo's concerned. If he is going to be the guy, I don't think he will. But not a lot of people are putting, you know, keep putting the dollars in the coffers there as far as Cuomo's concerned, because they want to see how these investigations pan out. And right now, he's in some hot water here. And the ultimate reason I think, I feel, and I felt this way for a long time, that he won't run for term four. I don't think he will. I think the heat will become a little too much. I think these investigations are real when it comes to harassment. I told you, one and two, Lindsay Boylan and Charlotte Bennett, especially the Bennett woman. She had a lot to say, and they kept going after her as far as questions. So this is not going away. And you're going to hear something within the next 30 days on this. You still have the nursing home deal. And that's why, and by the way, the book that came out, The American Crisis, $5.1 million. Hours logged by staffers. Investigators are looking at that as far as the book situation is concerned. On taxpayer time or what? See, that's all being looked at right now. And this, to me, is all going to be part of the equation down the road. Okay? So keep that in mind. He is gaining speed, Lee Zeldin. People like him. He's young. He's aggressive. He's got a good track record. And the more rounds he makes in and around the state, in my estimation, that enthusiasm will keep growing. Without question.